Active Podcast, where we provide short clips from the Active Inference Institute weekly live streams. If you want to take a deeper dive into this material, check out the entire live stream at the Active Inference Institute YouTube channel. The link to the live stream is provided in the episode description. I am Blue Knight, the host and curator of this episode, which is clipped from live stream number 13.2. This discussion is based on the 2020 paper entitled Integrating Cybernetic Big Five Theory with the Free Energy Principle, a New Strategy for Modeling Personalities as Complex Systems by Adam Saffron and Colin DeYoung. Daniel Friedman is going to start us off and facilitate our discussion.
It's really interesting that it's Big Five is not the essence of an individual. It's actually in a cybernetic framework, making the individual's phenotype in relationship to the goals and the context of their niche. So it actually moves away from some of the essentialist types of critiques that people might naively bring up against Big Five. We're looking at this as an empirical pattern with a generative underlying cybernetic reality. So Scott, then Adam, then anyone else.
Thank you. Hello, everyone. My name is Scott David. I'm at the University of Washington Applied Physics Lab, where I'm the director of the Information Risk Research Initiative. The couple of observations. One, personality is for a person. And so it's kind of interesting when we take personality and impose it on other systems, right? I'm just playing linguistics there a little bit. But in a way, what is the delta between personality and living formality, I wonder? So that might be, because are we assuming the human elements? Again, it's that subjectivity question. One of the things also, it occurred to me that Friston, it kind of allows for a notion of situated personality beyond situated cognition. And so maybe those are overlapping, maybe they're not. I'm not sure if all personality elements are seen as cognitive, or if there's some things that are, you know, or affective and hormonal and whatever other causation chains there are. So it's interesting that the behavioral elements we ascribe to personality may or may not drive through all living systems. I tend to define living systems, and it's not anything reasoned. It's just what I've done for the last 10 years, and it's been effective for me, is I define living systems as autocatalytic and entropy secreting. So they can be in a variety of different forms. And so I think of markets and corporations as living systems. And so to me, one of the questions that with the definitions, in the Friston notion, we have kind of a fractal notion of things that are show scale independence, I guess, is one of the elements of fractal systems. And so to what extent can the definition of using these personality traits at different levels help us understand the scale independent possibilities there? So that's one issue. Then the last point, and these are kind of random, but I think they're clustered around the idea of the model ascribing. The last one is, you know, when we talk, if I'm talking to Daniel, there's at least four identities involved there. My sense of me, his sense of me, his sense of him, and my sense of him. So one of the challenges when you're talking to corporations, markets, maybe not dogs, because they may have qualia, is that the other entity doesn't have qualia. If you're talking to a corporation, it does not have qualia. The people in the corporation have qualia, but the corporation itself does not. And so that's obviously, we can talk about that. But my point is, if they don't have qualia, can they have empathy? And if they don't have empathy, maybe there are differences in kind up the Friston stack of fractal stack of living things. And so maybe that is one way to start to distinguish between markets and corporations. And again, gets back to the animals issue. Do animals have qualia? Is the quality of their qualia slightly different than ours, such that maybe there's a subset of personality that they'd show, things like that. Anyway, just a couple of random thoughts, I think. But they, again, that definition of living beings, I think, is bound up in here. And again, not being too stubborn in our perspective that the personality is something that would describe all the attributes that work up and down the biological stack. Thanks.
Cool. We got Adam, then Stephen, Marco, Colin.
Hi, I'm Adam Saffron. I'm a postdoctoral researcher out of Bloomington, Indiana. With relation to what Scott was saying, I think that's actually, so I don't want to also, like, while I'm interested in seeing like how far we can stretch personality, I wouldn't want to overstate it either, because there were major transitions in evolution. And, you know, one of them would be basically the ability to have certain types of generative modeling where there might be a qualia and qualia of different varieties. And then we might go beyond that to not just qualia, but things like access consciousness. And if you like that distinction, I do, like being able to know your experience and report on it, and things like being autonoetic and being able to reflect on even your knowing. And so this would be very different cybernetic systems once you introduce this. So like you can have like, and if you have something like the Big Five showing up, or the Big Ten, or the Medium Ten, I don't know what you would want to say, but they might show up differently. So like you can think of like generalized agreeableness as like tendencies towards like non-zero interaction and like not defecting in generalized game theory, something like that. Like in a multi-agent context, you're more of a cooperator and you coordinate better. But very different thing if you're actually having something like the feeling of compassion or empathy. These are different processes getting into the mix, and yeah, you want a different handling, and some things might not actually, you want a very different handling.
Yep. Interesting. Like, would rather somebody act compassionately and be perceived as high percentile compassion, or perceived overwhelming experience of compassion? Stephen, Marco, Colin, Blit.
Hello, I'm Stephen. I'm based in Toronto. I'm doing a practice-based PhD at the Sullivan School Institute of Applied Psychology. Yeah, this brings in the idea of how people relate in a task-based environment, or a more task-orientated environment, I suppose, where it might structure things a bit more clearly between the things in the world, where the person is, and whatever mechanism or structure is interacting between the two. Am I picking up a tool? There's some sort of delineation. And one thing that sort of comes to mind when we talk about, so you've got the generative model, you've got these hidden states of the world, and you've got this Markov blanket. And the thing with the Markov blanket is, unlike, it's not a system boundary, you never can really define it. So you've got this, and what I thought was quite interesting really, when you, by having the stability and plasticity, I'm seeing sort of the plasticity with this extroversion, which you could say is like influencing the hidden states in a way. You're perturbing out there, and the intellect is making models, is the sort of the other side. But the stability in some ways is really stabilizing with the Markov blanket, like the nature of the regime, because you've kind of got, you know, neuroticism, is it like a, is it a very hilly landscape of actually like inferring? So maybe we, because I'm really interested in how we might have mental space psychology approaches, which there might be some sort of intervening spatial mediator to how we process, and that spatial mediator of how big and scary things are around us and in our metaphors, it could be sort of mediating, so the neuroticism, the agreeableness, the conscientiousness seem to have more structuring about how I might take data in through a Markov blanket to the other side, and the other two seem to have a bit more about what's out there and what's in here in a very crude way. But that's just something that came up for me. I thought it was really interesting.
Cool. Thank you. Marco, Colin, Blue.
My name is Marco Lin. Yeah, I also want to build up on that. So I fully agree. I think the prospects that are most attractive with this kind of approach to personality is, as Stephen alluded to, that you can associate these aspect factors into particular imperatives, to particular challenges, as it were. I think it's nice also to note, to connect that with what was mentioned in the beginning about Mars levels of analysis. So Mars levels of analysis is a bit of a hot topic always. So forgive me, I'm a bit biased. But personally, I don't believe that active inference should be seen as quintessentially computational, because I think it would discredit the fact that it implies a lot about the algorithmic level. So just like Stephen kind of already said, you could have these intermediate spaces, right? And that's basically asking you how these computational imperatives or functions are going to be realized. And I really want to emphasize the notion of mediation, because I want to connect that to what Scott was talking about. So it should be emphasized that, from what I can tell, this model of personality is kind of neutral about consciousness, right? It doesn't, we should be very, very mindful about not conflating the first person signs or perceptual models of how empathy arises within us with the process of empathy as such. Because if you see the process of empathy within the brain, then there's two ways to perceive it at the very least. Third person view from the measures, whether physiological or questionnaires, and first person, of course. And it stands to reason that it's not necessary to have that first person encounter with these processes for these processes to happen. But having said that, it would be very interesting to imagine that consciousness would be like a intermediating space as well, such that the component factors and the respective challenges of the Big Five can actually equilibrate, in the sense of the it's not a trivial challenge to balance the respective aspects of these factors and the factors between each other for the autonomous being of concern. And so it would stand to reason that indeed there might be another intermediating space intermediating between these five factors, which would emphasize the cybernetic function of something like consciousness as a space. Which I think it might be interesting for you, Scott, because I think then you can generalize it for non-living beings or composite organizations. Because if you then associate personality as heuristics for certain domains of challenges or domains of imperatives, and then having to bind them together through a certain integrative space, then you could have, I think, a very interesting approach to organizational science, if that makes sense.
Thanks. That reminds me a lot of the projective consciousness model paper that we read in a previous ACTIMP stream, but it's almost like wondering if the cybernetic organisms or cybernetic systems other than organisms, if they have a projective geometry, do they also have that awareness? So Colin, Blue, Scott.
Hi there, I'm Colin DeYoung. I'm a professor in the psychology department at the University of Minnesota. What I wanted to say actually ties in nicely to the point that Marco was just making. I was going to start by saying that I think it's important that the existence of personality is not dependent on the existence of qualia. So this is, a mistake that people often make when they're considering the Big Five and similar personality systems. They think, oh, well, these are just about how people perceive themselves or about how people perceive other people. And maybe they're useful categories in terms of like what you need to know about a person. But actually, the claim is that, you know, assuming that these descriptions of people's behavior have validity, they describe patterns of behavior that exist regardless of whether people are accurately aware of them or not. And so you could have differences in, you know, persistent differences in behavior from organism to organism in any species that would be directly analogous to what we think of as personality in human beings. Now, of course, it is true that we have this additional layer in which one kind of characteristic adaptation that we have is that we tell a story about ourselves consciously, and we can describe ourselves, and we actually make use of that when we try to measure people's personalities, because we, you know, often just ask them to describe themselves. But we're not interested just in their description of themselves as such. We're interested in, or we hope, and you know, we know from a fair amount of evidence that those descriptions are reasonably accurate. So it's not just that I think that I talk a lot. I actually do talk a lot if you take some kind of objective measurement of that, right? That's part of what being extroverted is about. And so, you know, consciousness is obviously something that, well, is mysterious in various ways. But I think that, you know, if we focus on that division between the easy and hard problems of consciousness, I think we actually have some pretty important things to say about the so-called easy problems of consciousness, like how does it function? What does it do? And, you know, I think Marco is right that one of the things that consciousness does is allow people to deal with conflicting information, conflicting goals, and to create a sufficiently broad model of the world and our attention of it that we can then control our attention effectively. I really like Jeffrey Gray's perspective on consciousness. His last book was just called Consciousness, Creeping Up on the Hard Problem. That's really excellent. And then I also like, what is his name, Michael Graziano's theory of consciousness. It ties in very nicely to this idea that a cybernetic system to be a good cybernetic system, you have to have some kind of physical representation of the variables that are being controlled. That's the good regulator theorem. And so I think that one useful way to think about consciousness is as a model of our attentional field that allows us to direct our attention effectively to things that are important for our goals or things that are potentially conflicting between goals. And so in that sense, yes, it would certainly be relevant to conflicts that arise because of different needs or goals that are related to different personality traits. But it's not something external to the traits mechanistically, because the traits are descriptions of patterns of variation that, you know, in a population. And so when we ascribe them to the person has a level of the trait. And so those traits actually should be reasonably comprehensive descriptors of functioning in all of the important categories of human function. And that includes consciousness. And in fact, if you look at the contents of the Big Five, openness and intellect is the trait that is really related to the qualities of consciousness. People who are high in openness are conscious of more things. Their consciousness is broader, it's deeper, it's more complex. So there's the openness side of that trait and the intellect side. And so you've got this sort of pattern detection and then pattern analysis. And all of that is basically about, in large part, the qualities of our consciousness.
Cool. Very interesting. Blue, then Scott, then Adam.
So I am going to totally bypass consciousness because it's just, it's a hard problem, right? But I do want to just consider for a minute, what would happen if we maybe mapped, like, not asking what is a person, but what is an individual? Could we then like scale over like non-human systems, like, you know, organizations, or even to other animals? Like Adam brought up like major transitions in evolution, and how do these like personality traits maybe influence evolution? That would be interesting to think about. Like, can we think of maybe clams as like ultra neurotic creatures and ants as like high in conscientiousness? Could we take like these personality traits and map them onto organisms, you know, that have evolved over time, and what would that look like in terms of evolution, and what is essential? You know, openness to exploration is obviously key for, you know, some of the major transitions to happen.
That reminds me of the principal components, the Big Fives. They're based upon the patterns of empirical variation in the actual population, as Colin brought up. And then the animal spirits are, without making a metaphysical claim, they're like archetypes, like of bravery or of extroversion or a social butterfly or, a couch potato. It's still a living creature. It's a potato. It's in the ground. And so how we model different types of metaphors, it's like that's on our Procrustean bed. But then what does it look like to have it on their Procrustean bed for their personalities or individualities? So Scott, then Marco, then Colin.
Blue, I love the notion of neurotic clams. That's my favorite. this is great. And just along the same lines, a couple of things that leaped into my head. I was thinking of Irving Goffman stuff, where you project yourself out as you want to be perceived. So that's kind of you're modifying your environment in terms of the persona perception. That was one thing. Then also a lot of self-other things in here, the identity kind of notion and that idea of presentation of self. One of the things I was wondering about is the DSM, Diagnostic Statistical Manual, DSM-5 just came out, and really how it plays into the, what I guess they would define as anomalous persona traits. And usually DSM seems to me the ones that make you not productive in a capitalist society kind of things, because there's a lot of things in there they call cultural in there, but it's interesting that those are the outer bounds of what's expected, expectations of persona. And I think a lot of the survivalness questions have to do with expectations and the arising of these variables in the corollaries in animals and in people have to do with survival and increasingly in social survival, but also just that survival of the organism. And so that idea of presentation of self might be even related to camouflage and issues of that. You know, how do you present yourself or not present yourself in society? So anyway, that just that host of thoughts about how that naturally evolved is kind of interesting. Also, this is not a studied thing. I'm not an expert in this, but just functionally, again, I think of the mind and consciousness. Well, I think, put consciousness aside, just like Blue said, but I think of the mind as not in the brain. I think of the mind as in language and material culture, and the brain as an antenna tuned into the local mind. So if you're, my sister adopted a child at the age of 5 months, and now she's was raised in central Pennsylvania, and she was adopted from China. She doesn't speak Chinese. She speaks Spanish and English. She's a U.S. person, but she looks like a Chinese person. So that their mind was developed in Pennsylvania. And so if there's no feral consciousness, which, let take that as an assumption for a second, or no feral mind, and if it's a learned phenomenon, it's interesting that we have this framing, and then we keep re-upping the framing, reaffirming and valorizing the framing. It's interesting to wonder if there's a lag in terms of survivability. What were the persona characteristics that were selected for? And I don't just mean in biological evolution, but socially, are they identical to the ones that will be selected for in a much more dense interaction environment, for instance? So there may be some interesting questions if and to the extent that persona is not on board in the brain inherently, but is a learned social phenomenon. What is the, how malleable is it? And I mean, I guess that's what education is about, and why colonialists try to get indigenous people in their schools, their children in the schools early, to render the externality innocuous. But it'd be interesting from a perspective of current situations that we have, and current policy challenges and public health challenges, et cetera, information challenges, how might we handle those, recognizing a more plastic persona? So just a few thoughts. Thanks.
Cool. Okay, Colin, Adam, Marco.
Okay, well, I think that there are certainly, it's certainly true that there are aspects of the mind and personality that are learned, but then there are others that are evolved, essentially, and sufficiently genetically programmed that they would be present even in feral children. But and that connection back to the idea of the evolution of personality, when Blue was talking about neurotic clams, I was thinking about some of the work that's actually been done on the evolution of personality in animals. Some of it is very interesting. There's a really nice paper from, almost 15 years ago now, by Daniel Nettle, that talks about the evolution of personality in humans and other animals. And so one of the things that he talks about are these experiments where you take a bunch of fish, and if you just naturalistically observe them, you will see that there are differences in personality. Some of the fish are relatively bold, some of them are relatively timid and cautious. And what you can see is that if you systematically manipulate their environment, you can actually change evolution of that population over time in interaction with the personalities of the individual. And so the way that I think about this is that personalities drive evolution, but evolution also drives changes in personalities at the population level. So what happens is that if you have those fish in an environment that has a lot of predators, then the bold ones get eaten, and the frequency of the more cautious, timid ones increases in the population. But if you put them in an environment that has very few predators, then what happens is that the bold ones tend to monopolize a lot more resources, and the frequency of the bold personalities increases in the population.
Yes. So always the ecological selection on the development of personality, not even just personality, something that can be reached out and grasped, but actually how personality becomes developed in relation. So Adam, then Marco, then Stephen.
Try to tie together a few threads before I lose them. So like earlier I was saying, evolution is one of multiple perspectives, but a really special perspective. And it is a really special perspective. It almost makes me move towards on some level I'm an instrumentalist, but with respect to the things what is the ontological status of a Markov blanket, I think there is also a realism, a quasi-realism, and maybe a realism so strong we can sometimes throw away with the word quasi, although we should always kind of keep it in our back pockets, and that we should keep in mind that there are multiple ways of carving up the world, actually infinite ways. It's just some are going to be more or less good for beings such as us. And one really good carving would be the one that basically relates to functional cycles that achieve closure on timescales where they can be subject to cumulative evolution. Broadly construed, whether being the development of the organism or phylogeny. And so what that might pick out some particularly universally agreed upon while still subjective joints. But to kind of bring it together more, among those, and with relation to your personality characteristics, there's an interesting thing that can happen for species capable of modeling each other themselves with a certain kind of richness, having certain types of consciousness and the sense of knowledge, where, and even without it potentially, that they can become aware of these reliable core screenings of themselves and others. And then this forms a basis for your planning. And then this forms a basis for basically not just the niches that you're trying to construct, but the way your niche is constructing you. And so for all this, like active inference with its like embracing of circular causality and this mutuality between like system and environment in terms of each being its own kind of active inferential system and exploring this interplay, I think that's really essential for understanding personality in both the specific and the general case. Before I let you all move on, like one final set of threads would be like when talking about something like consciousness. So, like I recently kind of took on the hard problem. It is debated how much success I had, but in trying to make way on this, it seems useful to not, and probably with respect to discussions of personality, all of our words are just words. They're core screenings that we agree upon. And you know, they don't exist in the world. And so consciousness, part of the issue is like, we mean very different things when we use a word sometimes. And so so you might say, as Scott was suggesting, like, you know, is, we might want to distinguish between mind and consciousness or intelligence and consciousness. And so you could say like, your mind is distributed through the world and that your brain is an antenna. And I think that's a good perspective. But if you're thinking of like consciousness as like a type of model where there is something that it's like from the inside to be that kind of modeling process, that might not be extended. That might be like a subsystem and a submodel. And so similarly, we're kind of building up this onion of complexity with respect to consciousness. And people are kind of engaging at different levels, but not always being clear on the level that they're engaging it. And so you could... So recently, I was engaging at the level of like basic phenomenality itself. And Rudroff in like the projective consciousness model, it's a very similar spirit. It's specifically, what are the ways we can describe your subjectivity as a particular reference frame and point of view in the world as you as a cybernetic system? How can we characterize that? And so then we go like another level still, and we're getting to what Colin's talking about with things like attention schemas. And like models of your awareness for modeling yourself and others in shared and shared attention schemas. And so I guess the and we could go further still and get to things like self-consciousness, reflexive self-consciousness. And each of these will be kinds of major transitions in evolution and development, which I understand as a kind of evolution. And each of these will now dock with personality in different ways. Now, I guess the one final thing with that's interesting is the way in which personality traits, if you're thinking of them as kind of core screenings, so like if it's like core screen descriptions, and so when can you core screen? You can core screen when you have something like a renormalization process, when you have some sort of like emergent attractor structure, such that the lower level or the smaller fluctuations, smaller dynamics can be kind of like averaged out because now you're pointing at this bigger thing and the bigger, slower attracting manifold didn't care about the particulars. So, or rather, that's not relevant for this coarser phenomena that you're trying to observe. And so there's a sense in which personality is a kind of coarser. And it's like, what are the nature of these like normalization processes? So one of them, it would seem, like, so what is inducing this attracting structure? It seems like a good part of it would be so you can model yourself across situations. So you know, what kind of agent am I that I am likely to be doing what in what circumstances? And this will be pretty essential for pursuing any kind of complex plan. But similarly for coordination, working around other agents, or cooperation or competition, what kind of agent is this I'm dealing with? But for the sake of cooperation, you might, you know, ask someone to be responsible. They should be able to respond and report in a reliable and consistent way. We actually demand of each other in a way a certain non-erratic character. We demand dimensionality reduction of each other, just because otherwise we get surprised. And as the Ferengi principle in active infrastructure says, we don't like being surprised. Because then we can't plan, and then we can't outsource our cybernetic entropy, and it's bad. Cool. So there's a sense in which, to what degree, like there's the same way that like personality traits are influencing, they're emerging from evolution, then influencing the course of evolution. With development, your personality traits are emerging from your interaction with your environment as you're carving out this niche. But also, they can also become like attracting targets in of themselves on different levels. Like if you're if you have this expectation of yourself as being this type of agent, it can be a self-fulfilling prophecy. I think I'm a neurotic agent. I think I'm an extroverted agent. Now other people think I'm a neurotic agent. Other people think I'm an extroverted agent. And now they're treating me a certain way, and I'm acting a certain way. And then this keeps going.
Yes. A lot of awesome stuff. That reminds me of the scripts. It reminds me of the phrase, the common saying, the absolute power to act absolutely brings responsibility, or something like that, like power and responsibility. But now we're talking about the power to act and the responsibility to stimuli. And that means that we respond.
We hope you enjoyed this episode. Stay tuned for next time, where we will have our final discussion of Cybernetic Big Five and the Free Energy Principle.